I do think that ultimately the juniors, as they have in all the cycles, you know, the bull and bear cycles I've been involved in since 2001, the juniors are going to have their day in the sun where it's like all of a sudden, you know, one by one, they'll start moving higher. And a lot of times it'll happen without any news.
This episode of Mining Stock Education is brought to you by Orin Resources. Orin is a junior exploration company with the appetite of a major, focused on finding the next globally significant discovery to create enormous potential upside for shareholders. It's one of the most aggressive exploration companies pursuing high-grade, scalable gold and copper deposits, and has a premier seven-project portfolio, including its two flagships, Committee Bay in the Arctic and Sombrero in Peru. With Orin's unparalleled technical team and highly experienced management with a history of success and advanced and monetizing exploration assets, Orin has been called one of the best in the junior exploration sector. Orin trades on the TSX and NYSE under the ticker AUG. To learn more, go to orinresources.com. That's AURYN resources.com. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, and thanks for tuning in to another Mining Stock Education episode. I'm Bill Powers, your host. I'm joined today by Dave Kranzler of Investment Research Dynamics. Dave is a frequent guest, although it's been 6 months since I've had him on the show. His website is investmentresearchdynamics.com. He's the editor of the Mining Stock Journal and the Short Sellers Journal. Dave also runs a precious metals and mining stock fund based out of Denver, Colorado. So, Dave, I appreciate you joining me again.
Has it really been 6 months since you've had me on your show? Did I do something to piss you off?
You did it. And I always appreciate your insights. I do always pay attention, follow your website and such, and your commentary. I listened to a couple of your interviews this week, so I've gathered some of your thoughts that way. But I did notice, and I told you this pre-interview, that it seemed like you weren't commenting as much in the last 6 months on junior mining, at least publicly. What's behind that, if anything?
Nothing really. I mean, you know, I part of it is I try to separate myself from the people that are always out there trying to promote and hype the precious metals and the mining stocks. You know, I mean, I've stubbed my toe enough times over the last 18 years trying to, you know, time the next upturn or tell people get ready, here it comes, and then it doesn't come, that, you know, now I'm kind of more of like a sit back patiently, look for ideas that I think are ignored by the market or seriously undervalued, and start accumulating those and just wait patiently. I think I've written a couple blog posts recently where I said I think we are potentially setting up for a big move. And I think you can support that assertion with both, you know, technicals and fundamentals. And, you know, I've been for the last, I don't know, 10 years at least, I've primarily focused on the junior mining stocks. And they, you know, the large cap mining stocks kind of woke up in, I guess, September. Gold started waking up again in mid-August. And the juniors have been going sideways, continued sideways to down, which in some ways I think is a positive for the ingredients, the mix of ingredients required for a sustainable upward move. So I guess I'm kind of more just patiently waiting for more indication that we're going to eventually, you know, we're about ready to embark on a move that'll take us through the nefarious 1360 to 1380 area and hopefully above 1400 and higher from there. And so right now, what's going on, the dislocation between the macroeconomics, both in the US and globally, and what the stock markets are doing, that dislocation there to me is more interesting right now than the precious metal sector. So I've been writing about that more, but precious metals are always my first love.
Yeah, you've been writing a lot on the, and I should have said that, a lot on the macroeconomic issues, Fed policy. When you're looking at Fed policy and some of the recent statements by Fed chairs and the Fed minutes, how do you think that is going to affect gold in the next 6 months? And of course, how is that going to impact the miners over the next 6 months?
You know, I hate to use these adages or sayings, you know, history repeats. No, it doesn't repeat, it rhymes. But in many ways, it's not exact. In many ways, the system has is set up exactly, well, not exactly, but it's set up very similarly to the way it was set up in 2007 and 2008. And that's kind of what the last couple years, since we had that big push in the first half of 2016 in the sector. I mean, the GDXJ was up 300% in 6 months. You know, we had that big push and then a sell-off and then kind of grinding lower up until last August in September in the sector. So what, you know, and so I think, I mean, certainly from a financial standpoint, the problem this time around is worse than it was in 2008. You've got record levels of debt at every level of the system, government, corporate, and household. And it may not be as blatantly subprime as it was back then, but I guarantee you that part of why it doesn't look like it did back then is because they changed the way that they rate prime versus subprime. I was just reading an article about it yesterday about how FICO scores have been exaggerated, or they're very high now relative to what they would have been if the FICO scores were calculated the way they calculated them back in 2006, 2007. So there's what we've got beneath the surface is a massive subprime debt bubble, especially with credit cards and auto debt. I mean, subprime auto debt, the default and delinquency rates are as high as they were in 2009 right now. Most people aren't aware of that. I mean, you're talking about a 9 to 10% delinquency and default rate in subprime auto debt, and it's getting worse. So I guess we also have a massive stock bubble, which was just reinflated by Powell mm-hmm. and Trump. So in many ways, we've had a housing bubble. This time around, it's not a volume bubble like it was in the mid-2000s, a volume and price bubble. This has been an extreme price bubble. And so in many ways, the system is set up the way it was set up right before what's called the Great Financial Crisis. It was really a de facto financial collapse that was bailed out by the taxpayers and money printing. And, you know, just like last time around, I think they've been trying to keep a lid on the price of gold to prevent gold from signaling to the public that something's not right. It was the same thing back then, from March 2008 to the end of October 2008, the price of gold was taken from 1200 down to 700. Okay. So, you know, it was done. And that was while Bear Stearns and Lehman were going bankrupt, you know, and that was done to suppress the signal that gold sends, you know, let the miners stay in the coal mine, just get the canary out of there so they can't see the canary's dead. And that's what's been going on with gold and silver these last couple years. Well, I think it's become kind of obvious that the Fed is going to, at some point, and whether they would do it anyway or whether Trump's going to pressure them into it, they're going to start taking rates lower, probably sometime this year. And I wouldn't be surprised to see money printing starting again, if not this year, and then early next year. And that'll ignite the price of gold like it did back in late 2008.
Kind of a canary in the economic coal mine. I was reading an article this past week, and the author pointed out that since February, platinum has strongly outperformed gold. And they pointed out historically that platinum begins to move and lead. It's the leading indicator of inflation, and it begins to move prior to gold and silver. Have you paid any attention to platinum of recent?
I mean, I'm aware of the price movement in platinum, but I don't really study the market. I don't spend time studying it because it's not a monetary metal. So I look at it more as a scarce industrial metal. So, you know, platinum always, I mean, that's right. Platinum seems to rear its head before gold. And we've seen that. I've seen that cycle several times since 2001. So, it doesn't surprise me that platinum's moving higher. There's also an element of momentum there because people get bored with gold and silver, and platinum and palladium start moving, so they jump to platinum and palladium. I can't tell you how many subscribers have emailed me to ask my opinion on platinum or palladium, and I'm like, you know what? I'm sure they're good long-term investments, but they're not monetary metals, so I don't spend my precious time looking at them and analyzing them.
You mentioned the junior sector is kind of lagging, so it's a stock picker's market. Are there any stocks that you'd like to share? I know that listeners always appreciate when you offer kind of your profiles and assessment of companies that you've looked at.
And I'd just like to say, you know, another one of my theses, I'm an English major, so I should know what the plural of thesis is.
Theses.
you know, to me, it's actually a good sign that the junior exploration segment of the mining stock sector is lagging. You know, these are most of these companies, the ones that are pure exploration companies, you know, that have a inferred or indicated deposit, and, you know, they may or may not eventually have a project or a mine. They're kind of like venture capital companies. And so they tend to go through periods of intense speculation or, you know, intense speculative interest or intense lack of interest. And we're in a period right now where they're in lack of interest. I mean, everyone's excited about the large cap mining stocks because of all the merger activity. You know, Newmont and Barrick are going to own every large cap stock out there, so I got to find the ones they're going to own. Well, I mean, you know, to me, the takeover premiums in the large caps aren't really that exciting. I do think that assuming that we're going to have a sustainable, durable upward move in the precious metal sector, and that's what I'm looking for right now, I do think that ultimately the juniors, as they have in all the cycles, you know, the bull and bear cycles I've been involved in since 2001, the juniors are going to have their day in the sun where it's like all of a sudden, you know, let's say you own 10 of them in your portfolio, you know, one by one, they'll start moving higher. And a lot of times it'll happen without any news. So I do think that time is coming. I don't want to put a time frame on it. But that said, one stock that I think is very intriguing, it's not well followed, is Mineral Mountain. And they are poking holes in the Rochford Gold District, which sits just south of the old historic Homestake Gold Mine, which at one point was the largest gold mine in the world. I think it produced 40 million ounces over time. It sits along the same type of geologic fault that produced that resource. And the guy who is leading the charge is a guy named Nelson Baker. He's the one that looked at Rainy River when no one else wanted to look at it and developed it into the project that New Gold ended up buying. And we can talk about New Gold in a minute if you want. But at any rate, Mineral Mountains kind of had a tough go at it. It had a big move higher people first became aware of it. I had it in my mining stock journal. I had it early on and it had a big move, and we have it in my fund, and I've owned it up and down the whole time. I mean, it's, you know, it's difficult to trade these things when you're looking at something that you think could go from being worth 20 cents to being worth $10 if they have what they might have on, you know, on their property. So at any rate, you know, they ran low on cash. It's expensive to drill where they're drilling, and the particular deposit or the particular mineralization that they're trying to drill into is complicated to drill. And they've been going through a period where they've been trying to raise some money. And I think they're on the cusp of raising money. I think they're pretty close to getting funding done. And Newmont explored this this property. I think it was Newmont in the 80s and 90s. And so they have all that drill data. And there's one specific spot where they want to start putting some holes. And it's in an area where Newmont had found 10 grams per ton of mineralization. And they're pretty confident that they're going to make a discovery if they can, you know, fund that drilling. And I think they're on the cusp of getting the funding in place. No one paid attention to it, but I paid attention to it. They put a guy on the board yesterday who's like, you know, a blue chip Bay Street guy in Canada. His name's Terry Lyons, and you can read about his background. And I don't think he would have joined the board if he didn't think that this company had some potential. And I'm not saying go out and load up on the stock, but I think it's one that's worth owning, say, an underweighted position just in case, because it's an extremely cheap option on what potentially could be. It's not going to be a mirror image of Homestake, I don't think. But I mean, there's certainly an argument to be made that, you know, they're going to find, you know, a very rich economical gold deposit on the property, as long as they can keep funding, you know, keep getting the funding. And again, for me, it's I'm betting on the jockey here. I'm making a bet on Nelson Baker, who on a contrarian basis, you know, went and looked at Rainy River and turned it into something. I think New Gold ended up paying $330 million for it or something like that.
And that's always important to do when you assess, especially early stage exploration plays. Are you betting on the property, the jockey? And in this case, like you said, you're betting on the jockey, so to speak.
Well, a little bit of both.
A little bit of both.
Yeah, the DNA
because of the past
the
history of the district.
And the jockey.
Yep, which is a good combo. And then, of course, financing is always huge in mineral exploration. So you said they're finalizing their fundraising for the upcoming drill season.
Well, it's been a work in process. They've run into some obstacles that were unforeseeable. I won't go into it, but I mean, it's just like, man, you know, every time they're getting ready to get this thing closed, something happens, and it has nothing to do with the funding itself or the project itself. But, I think my understanding is, the guy that I speak to there, Brad Baker, he's Nelson's son, and he basically handles the corp. He's a geologist, but he handles corporate communications. And he said he couldn't comment on it because he's in a blackout period. So with that, you know, the fact that he's blacked out on saying anything about it, I don't think this guy would have joined the board of this company unless they were about ready to get funded.
And just, I'd like to point out, as an investing strategy, if you are staying on top of the junior mining news, it's always good to focus who is coming off and who is going on to boards, because that can also often indicate, hopefully, an upcoming catalyst like you are mentioning here, Dave. You mentioned Rainy River, which is the property of New Gold. Now, this is a company that the stock, I'm looking at it here, has, you know, it's really been hit tough. What's the story here, and what are your current thoughts on New Gold?
Sure. I actually featured New Gold as a large cap, mid cap contrarian turnaround play in my last mining stock journal at 87 cents. And I've been in and out of New Gold since, I don't know, probably 2003, 2004. Pierre Lassonde joined the board back then, and he was a heavy promoter of it. He left the board in 2016, and I took a pretty close look at New Gold. I haven't talked to the company yet. I still need to, but we put the stock in our fund, and actually at a slightly higher price than where I put it in my mining stock journal, which is fine. I don't care, because I'm not in it for 10 cents. I'm in it for a double. But, you know, the bottom line with New Gold is they acquired Rainy River, I believe, in 2013 or 2014 at a much higher price of gold. I think they overpaid for it at the time, even in the context of, you know, I think gold was around $1,400 back then. But, you know, that companies were still overpaying for projects back then. They overpaid for Rainy River. And then there's another project that they bought, Blackwater, and I think they overpaid for that. And they've been taking asset write-downs on both those properties. And in the fourth quarter this year, they took a massive, you know, I think it was a everything but the kitchen sink write-down that companies like to do before their, you know, as you know, they kind of want to really clean up their balance sheet so that instead of disappointing investors with their results every quarter, they can start posting some surprises. And I think that's where we are with New Gold. Pierre, like I said, Pierre Lassonde left the board in 2016, which is fine with me. I don't think that means anything either way. I think it meant something at the time, which he probably knew the stock was going to go lower and didn't want to be connected with it. But to me, I look at it as a somewhat evergreen situation now. I mean, would I have bought it at $4? No. Would I have bought it at $2? No. I wouldn't have even bought it, you know, at a dollar, and then it dropped down to 80 cents. And I'm like, I got to take a look at this.
Do you view it as an optionality play? Because I'm looking here at their most recent presentation, and the Rainy River all-in sustaining cost per gold ounce is between $1,700 and $1,800.
Well, and that's, again, that's because they overpaid for it. I mean, all-in sustaining costs also includes, you know, the amortization of what it cost either to acquire the property or to develop it.
So those are sunk costs already
behind them.
Those are
sunk costs, yeah. And they wrote those down. And so I think, again, this coming from memory because I looked at it a couple weeks ago. I think they basically came out and said, look, we're going to have all-in sustaining cost of $1,500 an ounce in 2019. We're not going to be cash. This mine's not going to be cash flow positive until 2020. But we've put in place, you know, a restructuring and a mine optimization plan that's going to turn this into a cash flow positive project in 2020. So they basically have laid out all their, as far as I'm concerned, they've laid out all their marbles on the table. And they said, look, we're still going to burn money at Rainy River in 2019, but the new Afton mine is wildly profitable. And at a higher price of gold, it'll be even more profitable. And Rainy River has a lot of gold. It has a lot of gold reserves. They actually, New Gold reported its Q1 production results, and they've been missing production estimates for several quarters now, and that's one of the things that pissed the market off. Well, they basically said, look, we're going to be in line with our guidance. And what was interesting to me is that the recovery rate for the gold at Rainy River was at 90%, which was higher than it was in the fourth quarter. And that was with a lower grade of throughput going through the mill in the first quarter of 2019. And they also said that. They said, look, we're going to be putting the lower grade ore through our mill in 2019 as we transition into phase two of the mine plan. And so, again, it's I'm putting some faith here in management that they can get Rainy River turned around, and we'll start seeing, you know, numbers that surprise the market probably for the rest of this year after the first quarter. And so, I mean,
The Twitter hounds, I'm looking here, David, they're piling on New Gold, and the question is, are they going to be able to pay their debt back? I guess it looks like $780 million worth of debt, with $495 of it due November 2022, is what one Twitter critique says.
You know, it's funny, the Twitter guys worry about 2022. Wall Street doesn't even worry about next week when you got over indebted companies. I mean, look at Tesla. I wonder what that guy's opinion is of Tesla. I mean, Tesla has reams of debt coming due over the next 12 months. And, you know, that still has a $47 billion market cap. So, you know, I mean, the company's market cap is higher than the level of debt, which tells you that, the market's valuing just New Afton at more than the value of the debt. So yeah, I mean, if they get Rainy River turned around the way they said they're going to turn it around, this thing's going to be throwing off cash like crazy in 2020. I mean, New Afton already throws off cash like crazy. You start putting a higher price of gold in the mix, the optionality value here is, A, can they get Rainy River turned around? I think they can. And B, the price of gold. I mean, New Gold has a lot of gold in the ground, and at a higher price of gold, this thing becomes a money tree. So 2022, I'm not worried about 2022. That's 3 years away. I mean, tell me what the price of gold is going to be in 2022. I have no idea. We might be at war with Russia and China in 2022, for all I know.
Another company that you've been favorable to is U.S. Gold Corp, which is also a sponsor of this show. What are your current thoughts on U.S. Gold Corp?
Yes. Interesting you should mention that, because I know you just did a really great podcast interview with Luke Norman, who's really, I think he's actually the largest shareholder in U.S. Gold. And he was one of the co-founders of it. The Keystone, he owned a lot of the Keystone land, and he put it together with the land that Dave Mathewson owned. Mm-hmm. I just met with Dave Mathewson for a couple hours about 2 weeks ago. And it's the second time I've met with him. And I tell you, I learned more about geology spending 2 hours with him than I could learn in any 2 year period doing it on my own. And he's the first time I met him, he was excited about the project. But this time around, I mean, he was like really excited about the project. I mean, I think he and the geologists that he's working with there believe that they're right on the cusp of making a big discovery. And, you know, again, it's one of these things where you're betting on the DNA of the property. I mean, the Keystone property lies along the same fault line that produced the mineralization for Barrick's Cortez Hills project. And I think Cortez Hills is rated as a 15 million ounce property right now. But Dave told me the first time I met with him, he goes, look, any geologist who's looked at that property and that whole complex thinks there's probably 20 to 25 million ounces of gold there. You know, so if they could, they can prove up just 10% of that at Keystone. And it sounds like, you know, anyway, let me finish my thought. If they can prove up just 10% of that 20 million, like to find 2 million ounces, I mean, U.S. gold is a grand slam home run. I mean, the market cap right now is about
17, 18 million, something.
Yeah, like exactly. So what Dave will tell you about the Keystone property is that he said it's the best project he's ever looked at in his career. And he's made he's been in charge of teams and helped make some of the biggest discoveries in Nevada for Newmont. And then he also discovered the railroad deposit that, you know, is now Gold Standard Ventures. He said it's the biggest mineralization system he's ever seen on one piece of property. I mean, they got a 20 square mile piece of property there. And he said there's mineralization everywhere. I mean, you know, and that's both from historical drilling data that they had from drilling that was done historically on the property, and also from, you know, updating it with modern exploration techniques, geochemistry and geophysical tests, etc. And plus the exploration drilling that they've done to date. Dave refers to it as scout drilling. They actually had hoped that they'd be a little bit further along in the drilling process, but they ran into a snag getting their environmental permit to go into some areas that previously they could not go into to drill. And those are the areas that Dave said are the most interesting to him in terms of, you know, hunting down a deposit. And I won't go into what the politics of why, you know, they got delayed on getting the environmental permit, but essentially they're going to start drilling again in probably early June. It's been a rough winter up in that part of Elko, Nevada. And so just in terms of getting access to where they want to drill, they got to let it melt down, the land melt down from the winter. But the drilling that they're going to pick up with in June is they had actually had hoped to get that done before, you know, before Christmas. So, like I said, you know, he and his geologists think that they are on the cusp of making a big discovery. So, mm-hmm. You know, again, it's a venture capital play, and you're betting on the jockey here, and you're betting on the DNA of the property.
Any other companies before we move on to, I want to get your thoughts on copper, but any other companies you've had your eye on or you'd like to comment on?
You know, the ones that are most interesting to me, I like to kind of keep proprietary to my subscribers.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Again, I've been doing this sector of the market since 2001 intensively. And, you know, right now, I mean, I think the junior mining sector is as fruitful of an opportunity to invest in as it was back then. I mean, these stocks are dirt cheap compared to their optionality value.
Yeah.
And the technologies to uncover projects and the value of a million or 2 million ounce, even a 500,000 ounce deposit is much higher now than it was back then, because back then companies were still making, you know, 5 and 10 million ounce gold discoveries. We're not seeing those anymore.
Your view on copper is contrarian. I have to say, just a little history in the last 6 months, I've probably had 3 to 4 newsletter writers slash analysts on this show speak very positively of copper, even saying it's their number one commodity for this year and the next couple years based on the expected supply deficit. And then we also know that it takes copper mines so long to come on stream. So we know what projects are out there. And with the expected demand, the viewpoint is that copper must rise. But you have a more bearish perspective. Can you kind of give us insights as to why you view it that way?
I mean, it's no secret. I'm very bearish on the global economy. And I think we're on the cusp of going into a very, very deep, prolonged recession slash depression. And a big part of it is driven by the massive amount of debt. I mean, you just can't get around that unless you reset it. And so I don't know how you can be bullish on copper and bearish on the global economy. So, you know, it's easy to look at the supply and demand numbers. If you look over the last 10 or 12 years, I mean, China's been an enormous importer and an importer of copper, acquirer of gold, copper projects, et cetera. But you know, China's economy is crashing more quickly than the U.S. economy is right now. And so I just, you know, will they keep importing copper? Yeah, but I don't think they're gonna import it at the rate that they've been importing it since 2006, 2007. So I mean, to me, like to look at the supply and demand numbers for copper is kind of looking at, you know, driving by looking in the rearview mirror. You know, let's say even if the supply flattens out, I'm saying the demand's going to go down, because why would someone buy a bunch of copper and produce, you know, goods and products, et cetera, that and infrastructure that uses a lot of copper if they're not going to get a return on that investment? And so that's what I'm saying, is that, you know, the big projects or the industrial manufacturing goods that use copper aren't going to be produced if there's not demand for the products. You see what I'm saying? So if you look at a chart of copper that goes back to, well, I'm just looking at the one on FinViz, it goes back to 1995. I mean, over that period of time, you know, the average price of copper is probably $2. And you'll see it really started to take off in mid-2005, and that's kind of when China's big economic push and big development push started. So again, I guess what I'm saying is the demand for copper, at least for the next 3 to 5 years, isn't going to be there the way it was for the last 3 to 5 years.
A counter argument, I suppose, could be, well, even if the economy and the global economy begins to wane, we still are going to see an increase of electrification, particularly with vehicles and just society in general. Therefore, we need copper just for that electrical demand, not only electrical vehicle. Could you see that potential, you know, the rise in electrical demand, even if the economy wanes, as making up that gap to maybe keep a more inflated copper price?
Well, I mean, part of my view is that demand for vehicles overall, whether they're electric or internal combustion, is going to plummet. And we're already seeing that in the numbers.
Yeah. So you hold a more severe view of the bear market. And
well, how am I going to go out and buy a Tesla if I'm already loaded up on mortgage, credit card debt, and I've got 2 car leases, and if I turn those in, I owe money on the lease? How am I going to buy an electric vehicle if I can't afford to take debt down to buy it? I mean, that's the problem. You know, 80 to 90% of all the households in this country have used debt to make their purchases over the last 10 years, whether it's a house, a vacation, an education, or an automobile. So if I'm already loaded up on debt, how am I going to take out even more debt to buy an EV?
So the commodity you're most bullish on, therefore, is gold, right?
Gold's not a commodity. Gold's a monetary metal. A commodity is something that you produce and it depletes. Just about every ounce of gold that's ever been mined is still sitting above the ground, just sitting there. protecting wealth.
And it can fit into an Olympic swimming pool, right?
Yes.
Yeah, all of
So
it.
gold was never called a commodity until they introduced futures on it in 1974. And they wanted to they rebranded gold to get it out of people's minds, to get the idea out of your minds that it's actually money. It's the world's oldest form of money.
Which is what our country's constitution calls it, right?
Exactly. Gold and silver.
Yeah.
So I don't, you know, I might loosely refer to gold and silver as commodities, but they're not commodities. They're monetary metals. They're money.
Well, before we conclude, Dave, what's going on with the Mining Stock Journal, and what can listeners or potentially new subscribers expect?
Sure. It's biweekly. I release new issues every other Thursday evening. And a typical issue is I'll have a page or two of commentary on the precious metals market, what I'm seeing. You know, if the COT report is doing something interesting, I'll add my commentary on that. And then I go through the news updates that have happened over the last 2 weeks on the companies that I cover. And then if I come across a good idea, I try to present a new idea, or I'll go back and discuss an older idea with updated information, especially if I've had a chance to spend some time with management. And I think that there's a compelling reason, if you don't own the stock, but I've recommended it in the past, to maybe take another look at it.
And Dave's website is Investment Research Dynamics. You can go check out the subscription and also Dave's frequent thoughts on the markets and mining stocks at Investment Research Dynamics. If you like to ingest information on social media, you can follow Dave there. Just type in Dave Kranzler. His handle is at INVRES Dynamics, and that's his Twitter handle. Well, Dave, it's always a pleasure to chat with you. Thanks for taking the time, and I'll make sure that it's not 6 months before we come on and we chat again next time.
Likewise, Bill. I always love talking to you. I just wanted to add one point. I don't have a minimum subscription duration. If you want to try it for a month, you can try it for a month and cancel it. I'm not one of these guys that requires 3 months minimum or whatever. So.
Thanks, Dave. For millennia, ancient pharaohs prospered from unparalleled riches made possible by Egypt's resource-rich gold deposits. But despite this rich history, modern Egypt remains one of the most underdeveloped gold mining countries in the world. But that's all about to change. Aton Resources is leading the charge on the Egyptian mining revival. As the only public exploration company in Egypt, Aton Resources has first-mover advantage. Focused on their 100% owned Abu Marawat concession, Aton Resources is advancing several exploration targets, including the recent discovery of the legendary Lost Mountain of Gold at Rod Ruin. Learn more about this exciting drill program and other news at atonresources.com. Aton trades on the TSXV under the ticker symbol AAN and on the OTC under the ticker ANLBF. Thank you for listening to this Mining Stock Education podcast. Please subscribe and share with like-minded investors. Visit us on the web at miningstockeducation.com for more resources on precious metals and natural resource investing. At our website, you can also sign up for our free newsletter for interview transcripts, stock picks, and more. This podcast is for informational purposes only and is not to be considered personal legal or investment advice or a recommendation to buy or sell securities or any other product. We make every effort to be accurate, but the information presented is not to be considered infallible. It may contain errors, and we offer no inferred or explicit warranty. If personal advice is needed, consult a qualified legal, tax, or investment professional. Do not base any investment decision on the information contained on miningstockeducation.com, our podcasts, or videos. Make sure you always conduct your own thorough due diligence before investing. Realize that we may hold equity positions in or be compensated by some of the companies we feature and therefore are biased and hold an obvious conflict of interest. For our full disclaimer, please visit our website.